Hello, everybody. Today is Saturday, April 20th. I'm Bill Murphy here with Chris Sports, and there is a lot to cover. We're not going to be able to get it all in a half an hour. We have all sports, college football, UConn college basketball, UConn NHL playoffs, NBA playoffs, baseball. We'll do what I can here in a half an hour, try to read fast. Oh, the big news is that Stephon Castle is going to be going to the, at least entering the draft, the NBA. I'll read that article here. From the start, it was clear Stephon Castle wasn't your typical one-and-done player. He came to UConn all in for winning the championship and fulfilled that commitment to coach Dan Hurley. In fact, Hurley called him the anti-five-star because the team-first attitude was different from the typical high-end recruit. He matured as the year went on and was at his best in the Final Four, scoring 36 points in the victories over Alabama and Purdue as the Huskies repeated. On Friday, Castle told ESPN he had chosen his agents and will enter the NBA draft, where he is expected to be a top 10 pick. Some mock drafts have him at the very top. "The blessing you've worked most of your life for," Castle's father, Stacy, said via social media. "New chapter, let's get to work." Castle will be the second one-and-done player in UConn's history. Andre Drummond entered the NBA draft after his freshman season in 2012 and was picked 9th overall by Detroit and is still in the league, currently with the Bulls and one of the top rebounders in the game. At UConn, Castle, 6 feet 6, 215 pounds, from Covington, Georgia, fought through an early season knee injury and began hitting his stride in January. He averaged 11.1 points, 4.7 rebounds, and 2.9 assists, shooting 47.2% from the floor. He impressed opponents and scouts with his ability to play defense, locking down top players throughout the second half of the season, and particularly in the NCAA tournament. He averaged 12.5 points across the 6 tournament games. Throughout, Castle, 19, blended in seamlessly on a team with several much older players. Castle told ESPN he has retained Joe Smith and Thad Foucher of Wasserman to represent him. He will begin the process of working out for NBA team soon and is likely to be invited to the draft combine in Chicago May 12th to the 19th. "No freshman impacted winning like this champion," Hurley said via X in response to the news. Castle was entering the draft. "His combination of talent, work ethic, and humility, and great parents." With Castle's departure, the Huskies have lost 2 starters from the championship team, including sophomore Donovan Klingon, to early entry to the pros. Sophomore Alex Carabrine announced Thursday he will explore the draft process, but for now will also retain his college eligibility. 2 other starters, Cam Spencer and Tristan Newton, are out of eligibility. The Huskies have added forward Terrace Reed, a transfer from Michigan, and are hosting a 5-star recruit, Liam McNeely, a 6'7 small forward, early next week. And we're going to go to UConn football now. The UConn football team is finishing up spring practices under the radar during March Madness with the Fan Fest on Sunday at 12:30 p.m. at Marone Stadium on campus. After going 6-6 and playing in the Myrtle Beach Bowl during Jim Mora's first season, fortune sank last season to 3-9, with several of the losses coming down to the final seconds. Those games went UConn's way in 2022. As Mora's 4th season starts, the program, still independent, is perhaps at a crossroads. The Huskies play at Maryland and Duke early in the season and then have 6 games in a row at home, a chance to play their way into bowl contention. There has been the usual roster turnover, players leaving through the transfer portal and some coming in, and a shuffle in the coaching staff with new coordinators Gordon Samus on the offense and Matt Brock on defense on both sides of the ball. Now, here are some storylines developing as the spring season ends. First, at quarterback. As always, the quarterback situation is front and center. Joe Fagnano, who won the job last year and got hurt in the second game, is back, as is Taquan Roberson, who started most of last season and improved as the weeks went along, and would seem to be the favorite. Sophomore Tucker McDonald has shown some improvement in the workouts, and freshman Cole Welliver from Texas comes in with promise. The FanFest will offer some clues as to how things are shaking out. Defensive leadership. With Jackson Mitchell's career over, the Huskies lose a lot of leadership on defense. Now that Brock is in place, philosophies will be changing, though Moore's career is on that side of the ball. It's time to be on the lookout for changes in scheme and new leaders to emerge. Receivership. UConn has had trouble identifying receivers who can get open and get separation, and of the best they had, Justin Jolie and Cam Ross left via the transfer portal. New receivers have come in like T.J. Sheffield, Skylar Bell, and Josiah Gavins from the portal. Freshman Brock Montgomery for UConn's offense to be more explosive, as Samus envisions this new receiving core must be better than the last. Localize. Moore has emphasized landing in state players as a staple of his recruiting, and he has been getting the top players coming out of CIA schools and prep schools. Victor Rosa from Bristol and Cam Edwards from Norwalk established themselves in the offensive backfield last season. Several others could emerge as sophomore to play a larger role. More from the portal. The end of spring practice figures to be bring more movement through the portal as players on the roster discover they will not have the roles they seek and others become available. So the roster for 2024 is really still taking shape. Sheffield from Purdue committed earlier this week. There could be more comings and goings in the next week. And we are going to move on to baseball now. And I have the local teams. The Red Sox defeated the Pirates 9-0 behind a great pitching performance by Brian Bale. The Mets, I don't have the actual score, but I know they defeated the Dodgers out in the West Coast. And the Yankees, thanks to a three-run homer by Juan Soto, defeated the Tampa Bay Rays by a score of 5-4. Now, here are the stories. In the hours following a 10-game homestand, during which the Red Sox placed two members of their starting rotation on the injured list, the club made a depth trade acquiring Vladimir Gutierrez from the Milwaukee Brewers in exchange for cash considerations. In order to add the right-hander to the 40-man roster and option him to AAA, the Red Sox moved Trevor Story to the 60-day injured list. The transaction was mere formality at this point, as the shortstop was already done for the year following shoulder surgery last Friday. Though Gutierrez, 28, will start in the minors, he brings previous big league experience to the table. After defecting from his native Cuba, he signed with the Reds in 2016. He debuted with the Cincinnati team in 2021, making 22 starts, totaling 114 innings, with a 4.74 ERA, 5.22 FIP, 1.412 whip, and 88 strikeouts. He pitched another 10 games for the 22 Reds, including 8 starts, then missed the remainder of the season and all of 23 due to Tommy John surgery. He pitched in the minors last September. The Red Sox will be Gutierrez's third organization in the last 3 weeks. After becoming a free agent last November, he signed a minor league deal with the Miami Marlins. He made a 4-inning relief appearance for the major league team, but was designated for assignment to clear roster space, and the Brewers snatched him up on waivers. He made one AAA start for Milwaukee before they, too, DFA'd him. Gutierrez will be an interesting project for the Red Sox revamped pitching staff, as they continue to try to find the right combination. Andrew Bailey, the pitching coach who's worked wonders, is going to have his hands full with Gutierrez, but see what he can do. Despite losing Nick Pivetta with a mild flexor strain and Garrett Whitlock, oblique strain, on the IL, the Red Sox rotation has been the best in the game. They entered Friday lead majors in ERA, 1.82, WHIP, 0.99, opponent average, 0.203, and ranked fifth in walks and strikeouts. Boston boosts three pitchers with sub 2.00 ERAs over four or more starts. There are only four such pitchers in the entire National League. According to the Red Sox media relations, 90 pitchers have made four or more starts this season. Cutter Crawford, with a 0.42 ERA, is the only one who's posted a sub 1.00 ERA. Tanner Houck has made three scoreless starts of at least six innings, including the first Maddox, a complete shutout game on fewer than 100 pitches by a Red Sox pitcher since Clay Buchholz in 2014. Overall, the pitching staff has been one of the best in the American League. Their 5.7% extra base hit rate is unparalleled, and they're tied for third in walk rate, 6.9%, ranked fourth in strikeout rate, 24.6%, and tied for fifth in home run rate, 2.2. The Red Sox optioned left-hander Joe Jacques back to Worcester following Thursday's 5-4 series finale loss to the Cleveland Guardians. He allowed one earned run on three hits and struck out two over 1.2 innings in the 5-4 series finale loss. On Friday, he was designated for assignment in order to add Cam Boozer to the 40-man roster for this weekend's series in Pittsburgh. Boozer, 31, pitched in four games for the Woo Sox before getting the call and posted eye-popping strikeout numbers. He allowed two runs on three hits and a walk while punching out 15 batters in 6 2/3 innings. The majors have been a long time coming for the 31-year-old southpaw, who will wear number 71. According to the club's media relations, he'll be the oldest player to make their major league debut with the Red Sox since right-hander Tommy Fine almost exactly 77 years ago on April 26, 1947. And now over to the Yankees. DJ LeMahieu planned on starting a rehab assignment in Double-A Somerset on Friday, but the versatile infielder found himself in the Yankees clubhouse instead. LeMahieu underwent a precautionary MRI on Thursday night. It showed that the non-displaced fracture in his right foot had healed, but not quite what they were hoping for. A couple of doctors just didn't feel comfortable yet, LeMahieu said. Added Aaron Boone, they do feel like he is ready to go play, but as we've kind of talked about from the beginning, we're not playing with this at all. We want to make sure DJ's in a good spot when he does come back. The manager added that LeMahieu is close to 100%, but the Yankees are being conservative. The new plan is for LeMahieu to start a rehab assignment on Tuesday. In the meantime, LeMahieu can keep doing baseball activities, including batting practice and ground balls. I feel ready to go, he said, ready to get out and get in some games, but it shouldn't be much longer, I guess. I'm frustrated, but I'm ready to go. Another Yankees reliever hit the shelf on Friday as Nick Birdie is dealing with right hip inflammation. The Yankees placed the right-hander on the 15-day injured list. The move is retroactive to April 17th. Birdie, who has a .00 ERA over 6 1/3 innings this season, first felt discomfort on the final pitch of his last outing on April 16th. Boone said the injury is fairly minor, but Birdie has a long injury history. With that in mind, the Yankees didn't want to put him in a position where his arm had to overcompensate. Boone said Birdie has started taking some medicine, and the hope is that he'll start ramping up again in a handful of days. Another righty, Cody Morris, took Birdie's spot in the bullpen. Acquired from Cleveland for Esteban Florial over the offseason, Morris had a 1.93 ERA over 9 1/3 innings at AAA. Boone said the pitcher, who has 13 games of MLB experience, could give the Yankees more length than Birdie could. Yankees also added outfielder Taylor Trammell to the active roster after claiming him from the Dodgers on Thursday to make room on the 40-man roster. Infielder Kevin Smith was designated for assignment. A former top project and prospect, Trammell is a .165 career hitter over 121 MLB games with the Mariners and Dodgers. The left-handed swinger has some speed and has shown pop in the minors. He can also play all three outfield positions. Boone said Trammell will fill a reserve role and could be used as a pinch runner. It's an opportunity to get a talented player, Boone said. This is a guy that's been a big-time prospect in his career, hasn't really translated at the big league level yet, but it's a 26-year-old talented kid. And now over to the Mets, who are out on the coast. As it turns out, the Mets season was not over after the first week of the year. After dropping their first five games, the Amazings have been on an absolute tear. Carlos Mendoza's team is winners of 10 of their last 13 games, including impressive performances against tough opponents, including the Atlanta Braves. And as I mentioned, they won last night against the Dodgers. However, their hot streak is running into arguably the biggest test of baseball, as they were set to take on the star-studded Los Angeles Dodgers, led by Mookie Betts and Shohei Ohtani, for three games that began on Friday night in Chavez Ravine. They had a front-row seat last night to watch what they missed out on in free agency, as Yoshinobu Yamamoto was the scheduled starter going against New York's Sean Manaea. Here's a preview of what to watch for during the Mets weekend in Los Angeles. Manaea had the Mets faithful buzzing with his stellar start. However, his last turn against the Kansas City Royals left something to be desired entering the weekend. The southpaw surrendered six runs over 3 2/3 innings, ballooning his ERA to 4.50. Meanwhile, Yamamoto, New York's top target in free agency this past winter, was to face the Mets for the first time. The Japanese native results had been mostly mixed to start his major league career, as his ERA sat at 4.50. The remaining pitching matchup, Saturday at 4.05 p.m., Jose Buto versus Gavin Stone. Buto has arguably been the most impressive pitcher on Mendoza's staff. The right-hander has struck out 15 batters in 12 innings, while recording an ERA of 0.75. However, the 24-year-old will have to navigate a different caliber of lineup this time around. Stone has struggled to start the season, allowing 10 earned runs over 14.2 innings pitched. The red-hot Mets will need to take advantage of this pitching advantage. And Sunday, the game will be at 4:10 p.m., Adrian Hauser versus James Paxton. Hauser hasn't gotten off to the best start in a Mets uniform, owning a 4.70 ERA. The veteran has also struggled mightily against the Dodgers in his career, as he has pitched to a 9.39 ERA against them in two career starts. Paxton was a flyer for the Dodgers in the offseason, and the southpaw has been incredibly effective. The veteran carries his sparkling 2.87 ERA into Sunday's start against the Mets for his fourth start of the season. Now, here are some of the other key players for the Mets. Tyrone Taylor. Taylor has been a revelation for the Mets. In 15 games this season, the 30-year-old is slashing .341 with one homer and 10 RBIs. The former Brewer has played all three outfield positions and has hit everywhere but second and third in the lineup. Francisco Lindor. It's time for the Mets star to get going. Lindor has been atrocious at the plate to start the season, going 11-4-73. A big series against the World Series favorites could be the momentum boost needed for the four-time All-Star. And finally, Francisco Alvarez. Alvarez is another key contributing off to a slow start, which makes this recent hot streak that much more impressive. The backstop is slashing .241 with just one homer. The 22-year-old is an integral part of the Mets' future, and a power surge in Los Angeles may be required if the club wants to keep their momentum alive. And I want to just read a note here about the Braves' ace, Spencer Strider, their pitcher. He began to feel discomfort in his right elbow in spring training, but didn't realize the severity of the injury until learning he needed season-ending surgery. Strider said he had a bone fragment developed following Tommy John surgery in 2019 that caused the ulnar collateral ligament to become unstable. Strider also said he did not have a tear that required a second Tommy John surgery, and he instead had an internal brace procedure, perhaps giving him a better opportunity to recover for the start of the 2025 season. Strider was Atlanta's number one starting pitcher after going 20-5 with 281 strikeouts in, last year, when he led the major leagues in wins and strikeouts. And with his right arm immobilized in a sling, Strider said he will look for ways to support his teammates. These guys don't need me to win a World Series, he said, so you know they're going to pursue that journey. I'll be here to cheer them on. Now, this story from Boston Business around the TD Garden. Our businesses around the TD Garden are hoping for long playoff runs from the Celtics and Bruins so they can soak in as much economic productivity as possible, while police are warning fans to be wary of counterfeit tickets. Playoff season returns to Causeway Street when the puck drops Saturday night as the Bruins take on Toronto, and the Celtics start their championship run Sunday afternoon against either Chicago or Miami. With both teams chasing championships, business and tourism leaders expect massive gains for the economy in the days and weeks ahead, as long as they don't bail out early. This weekend's games may provide an accessible option for fans who are looking to get in on the playoff action but are unable to afford the hefty prices in the later rounds. Tickets are starting at $172 in the balcony for the Bruins Maple Leafs Game 1 and $126 for the Celtics on Sunday. StubHub listings showed Thursday afternoon. The Boston Police Department is urging fans to take caution and be wary of counterfeits when purchasing tickets to playoff games. In an alert Thursday, the department encouraged fans to only buy tickets from authorized ticket agencies. Officers want to proactively curb such activity and encourage buyers to only purchase from official vendors, the alert states. Purchasing via other means creates the potential for processing an invalid or a counterfeit ticket. Factor in how more and more people are working remotely, the playoffs are sorely needed to spark productivity as local businesses are being killed due to a lack of lunchtime or post-work rush, said Gregory L. Stoller, master lecturer at Boston University's Questrom School of Business. The fact that we have two teams that are going to be in the playoffs has been a boom not only for restaurants, but Uber drivers and to all small to medium-sized businesses that we walk by on a regular basis and just assume they're always to be there, but they can't always be there if they're not making enough rent to pay for the storefront, Stoller told the Herald Thursday. By the way, this story is in the Herald, written by Lance Reynolds. It's great that those businesses are going to get a shot, and let's just hope that the Bruins do better than they did last year, he added. The longer the Bruins and Celtics stay in the playoffs, the economic impact multiplies substantially. Analysis of the NBA Finals and Stanley Cup Finals found that each game contributes nearly $5 million, and said David O'Donnell, Vice President of Strategic Communications for Meet Boston, the region's primary tourism bureau. Meanwhile, for the second straight spring, Canal Street will be turned into a playoff hub, with the road being transformed into a car-free zone for fans to gather before and during home playoff games. The initiative, which tries to carry the intensity from inside the garden to outside, is part of Mayor Michelle Wu's commitment to reimagining Boston streets and transforming public space in a way that's enjoyable for residents, small business owners, and visitors. We're thrilled to give Boston fans an opportunity with both the Bruins and the Celtics in the playoffs this year to come together safely, cheer on their favorite teams, and support our local businesses, Wu said in a release Friday. I'm grateful to our partners for working with us to bring back the playoff hub, creating a joyful experience for our hockey and basketball fans. Wu, in partnership with the Downtown North Neighborhood Association, launched the Canal Street Pedestrian Zone ahead of last year's NBA and NHL playoffs, in which the Bruins bailed out after being upset in the first round and the Celtics lost in Game 7 to Miami in the Eastern Conference Finals. And we're going to just give you a story here on the Bruins. Boston Celtics legend Paul Pierce. Actually, this is, I'll do the NHL. Then if I have time, I'll do the NBA. The Boston Bruins may have found just the solution to their playoff slump. a first-round matchup with the Toronto Maple Leafs. The Bruins haven't lost a playoff series to Toronto since 1959, winning six straight series that have helped extend their original six rivals' Stanley Cup drought to more than half a century. Boston won all four regular season matchups with the Leafs during the regular season, all motivation, no doubt, for Toronto to turn things around. I just think just with the history we've had with them recently, they're probably our biggest rival now over the last decade, said Bruins captain Brad Marchand. As the team began practicing for the Saturday series opener, it's definitely bringing the emotion intensity up for the fans. It's a lot of fun to play, he said. It's always extremely competitive. You never know which way the series is going to go, but that's what you want, and that's what you love about hockey. Now I will try to get the NBA in here. The Boston Celtics legend Paul Pierce once said he had a clutch gene, that he was born with the ability to rise to the occasion when the game matters most. Knicks star Jalen Brunson, a premier crunch time performer in his own right, agrees performing under pressure can be in someone's DNA. I think that it's something that's, it's a thing for sure, Brunson said after Knicks practice in Tarrytown on Friday. Some people are born with it. Some people work for it. It comes with your confidence. It comes with your work ethic. It comes with being able to breathe and have a moment of not being flustered. A lot of things go into that. He definitely had that. Paul Pierce definitely had it. Knicks head coach Tom Thibodeau was an assistant on the Celtics staff when Pierce was a star in Boston. Thibodeau said Pierce had something in common with Knicks legend Patrick Ewing, who Thibodeau coached in an earlier stint as an assistant in New York. The thing that stood out is he went through his own workout 2 hours before the rookies, and then he watched the rookies work out, and then he eventually joined the rookies, Thibodeau recalled. I think it goes back to what gives you that clutch gene. I think a big part of that is the confidence that you get from preparation. Thibodeau said Pierce's ability to hit big shots under pressure wasn't an accident. All those shots he hit, I can remember him a million times in practice, working on every one of those things, Thibodeau said. He, too, had an incredible drive, and when you couple that with Celtics teammates Kevin Garnett and Ray Allen, that made the group incredible. And let me tell you what is on the air today. We'll start with baseball. 1 p.m. Tampa Bay at the Yankees. That's on the YES Network and also MLB. 4 p.m. the Red Sox again at Pittsburgh. That's on NESN, Radio 1080 WTIC. And at 4 p.m. the Mets and the Dodgers. That's on WPIX, also FS1, and also Radio 880 WCBS out of New York. Basketball, NBA, 1:10 p.m. Eastern Conference first round playoff, Orlando at Cleveland. That's game one, and it's on ESPN. At 3:30 p.m., Western Conference first round playoff, Phoenix at Minnesota, game one. That is on ESPN. 6 p.m., Eastern Conference first round playoff, Philadelphia at New York. That's game one, ESPN. And finally, 8:30 p.m., Western Conference first round playoff, L.A. Lakers at Denver, game one. That is on ABC. In hockey, playoffs starting 5 p.m. Eastern Conference first-round playoff, New York Islanders at Carolina, game one, TBS. And at 8 p.m. Eastern Conference first-round playoff, Toronto at Boston, game one, that is on TBS. And in golf, two events, 3 p.m. PGA Tour, the RBC Heritage third round, that's on CBS. And 3 p.m. LPGA Tour, the Chevron Championship third round on NBC. So I got as much as I could in today, pretty much covered everything. And there was a story on the Giants, but I didn't have time to read it. It was about Darius Slayton, who had being offered a pay cut, but is not going to take it. I don't have any more on that, but maybe we'll have some more next week on that. That's the only other story that I didn't get to. Otherwise, it's all pretty much covered, and hope you have a great weekend, everybody. If the rain's going to stop, and please stay safe.